Welcome to the Marvelous Synergy Podcast, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, Andy Tai, writer of several guides to the MCU, which are also called Marvelous Synergy. This episode will focus on The Incredible Hulk, the second film in the MCU. Joining me today is fellow comic book geek, Cheston Shu.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, doing very well. Thank you for coming on to the podcast.
My absolute pleasure. When I heard about the Hulk and we're going to be talking about how it fits in the MCU, I thought, Yes, please.
Nice. So just tell everyone a bit about yourself. You obviously are a fan of the comics. When did you start getting into those?
Funnily enough, I got into them around when World War Hulk was a thing. I've always enjoyed them. There was a store on Liverpool Street called Comic Kingdom, but now it's sadly no longer with us. And I always went into their back issue editions and always found what was nice back in the day. Never really appreciated the stories at the time. I just thought, it's a first copy of it. It must be really rare and all this sort of jazz. But now as I've matured in inverted commas, perhaps just appreciated more of the story and really like embrace what they are and what do they symbolize, because you know there's a lot of themes and drama that can be portrayed through a comic that is not as easy as other mediums.
Nice, very nice. Well, in addition to being a Marvel geek, you're also a big Pokemon fan as well.
Yeah, so I love all things trading card game related. I actually played the Versus system, which was, you know, based on characters from the Marvel and DC universe, which was incredibly fun.
Love that.
Incredibly fun back in the day. But if anyone is interested as well, I actually have an Instagram, Facebook page, as well as a website about it. It's called The Card Archive. And basically anything cardboard related with a strong emphasis on Pokemon and Digimon, you can come check us out there. The Instagram is thecardarchive_TCA, and we're on Facebook as well. Our website's currently undergoing a nice, pretty improvement, but it should be live at some point soon. Our website is thecardarchive.com.
Awesome. Yeah, so be sure to check that out, everyone. All right, as I said, we are focusing on the 2008 film The Incredible Hulk, the second film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was directed by Louis Leterrier, and unfortunately it gets a bit of a bad rap these days. You know, it's somewhat forgotten, given that it came out a month after Iron Man, but it didn't quite meet the same heights or it didn't get the same success as that first film. Having said that, you know, there are things that I like about it, and there are things that you also like, Cheston. One of them being Edward Norton. He wasn't that bad of a Bruce Banner. What are your thoughts on his performance?
I mean, as a slightly sidetracking to, you know, the release time of it, I felt that the Incredible Hulk film was already on a slight bit of a back foot because of the Eric Banner film. I'm not sure. Forgive me for this. I'm not sure if that's considered part of the MCU as well. But I feel like because audiences got a taste of what the Hulk was going to be with Eric Banner, it's sort of set a precedence for any sort of future films, and it's maybe left a bad taste in their mouth. But I guess if I was to describe Edward Norton's performance, definitely an improvement from Eric Banner. I feel like Eric Banner he had a very cool sort of look about him, and he didn't really portray the inner anxiety and the inner trauma that the Incredible Hulk has. And I feel like Edward Norton did that quite well. While on the other spectrum, if we were to talk about obviously Mark Ruffalo, which is the newest iteration of the Hulk, I feel like they're both quite comparable. Mark Ruffalo definitely gets the anxiety, gets the tension. You see the idea that the Hulk is trying to separate itself or like considered as two separate identities sort of thing. While Edward Norton was very much more focused on Eric Banner, I feel. He was very anxious about who he was, trying to escape, trying to leave that, trying to go with the whole, I want to be left alone sort of thing, which is very characteristic of what Bruce Banner was in the comics. But yeah, I definitely liked, if I was to, you know, we can compare between Eric Banner and Edward Norton, I definitely prefer Edward Norton. He's, he's got a lot of the tropes of the Incredible Hulk down quite well. Yeah.
So just for those that aren't sure, the 2003 Hulk film directed by Ang Lee is not canon to the MCU, But The Incredible Hulk, I suppose when that film came out and they were sort of developing a sequel, it sort of then didn't go ahead and it sort of morphed into The Incredible Hulk film that we got. And so I can understand the confusion there. And I think the marketing at the time didn't really do much to differentiate the two, you know, didn't really help advertise the fact that this was an actual reboot with no connection to that first film. I quite agree with what you said. I do like Edward Norton a lot more as Bruce Banner. Yeah, Eric Banner, he did have a bit of a cool vibe to him. I didn't quite really believe him as a sort of a nerdy scientist, whereas I get that more with Edward Norton. It's very much an inner performance, right? You read a lot from his eyes, especially with that first part of the film where he's hiding out in Brazil. You know, he's trying to keep to himself, trying to keep out of trouble. It's interesting the fact that, you know, Mark Ruffalo does take on the role later on, being, you know, Louis Leterrier actually did want to cast Mark for this Incredible Hulk film. But I think the...
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
The studios, I believe, they wanted some with larger star power. So that's why they went with Edward Norton, which, look, is a good choice. Edward Norton's a great actor, as we know, especially in you know, you see that in Fight Club. Yeah, there's just, like, I feel as though Mark Ruffalo, his performance, just that little bit more nuanced. And I feel, and also the fact that he's had more time to play the character, right? He's had more time to display his acting chops and his decisions as to, you know, why Bruce Banner would do certain things. And I guess, you know, if Edward Norton was given that opportunity, maybe he would have put in a more memorable performance as Bruce Banner later down the line. Who knows?
Oh, 100%. I feel like also that, you know, Edward Norton, and when that film was made, it was very early on in the whole saga of, I guess, comic book related films. And perhaps it was the discovery journey of figuring out what works in a comic book related film and what doesn't, you know. And Mark Ruffalo has obviously had the opportunity to see the films that have done well, the films that have not done so well, and, you know, has had time to perhaps, as you say, you know, study up and analyze, like, okay, this is what it is and whatnot. I'm actually not very sure if Mark Ruffalo is maybe aware of the source material or anything like that, or if Edward Norton is, but perhaps it may have helped them along the way,
Yeah, no, so that's Bruce Banner covered. I mean, let's move on to his alter ego now, the Hulk, obviously. What's meant to be the starring character, I guess. The look of this character, he's, you know, this coming out in 2008, the CGI hasn't aged very well, but it does, you know, for the time, it did look a hell of a lot better than what we got in 2003 Hulk. Yeah, and I think we would both agree as well that his appearance at this stage, at least, is also very much comparable to the comics. It's a much more faithful look.
Oh, for sure.
The one in 2003, he just looked so plasticky, right? the technology just wasn't up to scratch yet.
It just reminded me of his name escapes me, but he played the security guard in the Incredible Hulk film. Who was the original?
Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, that's the one. You know, where it looks like a dude with paint splosh onto him, which was the Eric Banner film. But this one, yeah, you're right. You could definitely see the, I guess, more of the muscle and bone structure and the veins popping is a lot more in detail, more in depth. And you could really feel more, I guess, the Hulk was a lot more expressive.
Mm.
Even though by comparison in this film, you didn't see too much of the Hulk. It was very, I think that's what people were expecting, that the film was going to be more on the Hulk and what he was going to do in certain situations. But it became more of a Bruce Banner, and he becomes a Hulk sometimes, sort of thing, and how he deals with certain scenarios, which maybe that's what sort of misled people's sort of expectations on the film, perhaps. But I feel like they really nailed it with, in this film, it's definitely an improvement from Eric Banner's time. He looks a lot, you know how in the comic books, you could tell that there were resemblances of Bruce Banner inside the Hulk. Like, they had a similar sort of hairstyle, and, you know, you could kind of tell, okay, if this guy, you know, gained like 500 kilos and was a hulking massive muscle, you know, he would kind of look like that. And that's what I liked about this. There was because they're not two different people. They're, you know, the whole point of the Hulk is that they are one they are two sides of the same coin. They are one embodiment. And as soon as, you know, people start, you know, when the comics started realizing that, oh, this is a far more powerful story. It's more about the duality of a person and the different sides that they can portray. And it's good that the transformation in this film shows that, you know, it's, they look similar, different, sure, but still similar. And it, the green was really, it's a very nice deep green. It's not like a plastic paint bucket that's been swatched over or made out of plastic or anything like that. And I feel like they really nailed it in, with Mark Ruffalo, obviously with better technology and CGI and all this sort of jazz, where it wasn't, now when I see it by comparison, this green is almost too green, almost borderline, you know, that you've just gotten, take this color, put it on this, while Mark Ruffalo's one is much more blended. It's borderline, you could almost see like a human skin tone type of thing. I don't know how you describe that. Yeah,
no, the Hulk really sticks out in this film. And I think given that, you know, the way technology has progressed, I do believe with Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, they've sort of perfected it where the skin's got sort of this translucent quality and it's more realistic. And they obviously went with a more organic shade of green, and that certainly helps. But what I love about this one, Edward Norton's Hulk, is that you sort of see him flex, and you see all sort of the muscles. Right, you see them. It's all really very well defined, very much an uber human in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, because the whole, like a lot of the film was talking about, you know, super soldier serum and, you know, what's his name? The doctor? My brain is just escaping me now. Dr. McKenzie, was it?
Dr. Reinstein, is that on the canister?
Yeah, but then I thought it was an alias on the, Dr. Erskine, who made the original super soldier serum. And to be honest, I didn't notice it at the time when I first watched the film, but when I rewatched it again, I'm like, why did the camera pause on this? I just did it quickly, like, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I guess the whole, since he is, I guess, you know, they try to talk up the whole super soldier idea and all sort of stuff. It makes sense that he kind of looks the way he does. And Abomination kind of looks like the way he does. It looks more humanoid than a far off alien being, for example.
Yeah, that's something I quite liked about the Abomination. You know, it's just sort of exaggerating the human features, right? He looks completely different from what he does in the comics. You know, for those that don't know, he's more reptilian looking. He's got these sort of ear things, and it's all scaly, and it's also green like the Hulk, which I can see why they moved away from that for the film. You as a comic book reader, did you like that change, or was it a disappointment, the fact that they weren't being so faithful?
I mean, I pointed when we were, you know, I think I liked that there was a distinction. I often get confused with Rick Jones's version of the Abomination where it's blue.
A-bomb.
A-bomb, right, that's right, A-bomb. And, you know, the ears are kind of like fins and it's scales and all sort of stuff. And but the way they took it in the film and versus what was done in the comics definitely looks more humanoid, very, very much less reptilian. But I guess they didn't want to create, another stark dissociation between, you know, Emil turning into that. They wanted to, I guess, make the logical leap between that dude turning into the Abomination, because obviously if you look more like a frog or a fish or whatever like that, they would have thought, where was the jump,
the logic in that?
So I guess they had to ground it in some sort of way. So I understand studios have to have that sort of grounding somewhere along the line, make it more believable, because you get skeptics out there saying, how did this turn into this? And, but yeah, I guess in future films, they've definitely changed that.
Yeah. And look, it does help in the end, with a final fight scene, you know, otherwise I think if both characters were green, it'd be a bit hard to differentiate the Hulk and the Abomination in that final fight, especially how chaotic that was. What did you think of Tim Roth's performance as Emil Blonsky?
He's definitely got the determination down, and he's definitely got, I guess, the fractured personality thing. But then we didn't know if that was a draw upon because of the serum, or was that because he just wanted a fight sort of thing? Emil Blonsky, I've always thought, seen as more like of a direct threat, definitely like a, you could say, a smarter version and stronger version, a smarter version of the Hulk, who is a, who's a little bit more tactical, still really strong, a bit more tactical. And Tim Ross, you say, was his name? Sorry?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah.
Definitely a very strong portrayal. He's definitely got the, when they were fighting, definitely he used a lot more military related moves, a lot rather than just, you know, swinging his fist, kicking things around, which is typical of the Hulk, perhaps, but perhaps not in the comics now, but definitely fighting dirty when he needs to be, yet using his, you know, his full body to the maximum, showing that he's got control of what's going on. And I think that's always been a strong characteristic of Abomination. He's able to, you know, assess this situation a little bit better. He makes, he calculates a bit more. And I think Tim Ross definitely portrays that through. I guess in terms of, I guess, identifying, you know, the hatred with the Hulk, I still feel it felt quite weak. It really wasn't conveyed in the film. Like, yes, okay, I understand you lost a fight to him, but, you know, if it was any other normal person, you're like, this dude, the Hulk is, you know, the Hulk, you know, giant, massive muscle and can do X, Y, and Z. You're never going to win in a, you know, a fair fight, you know, even with the best weaponry possible. But for that to turn into, I want to become it to defeat it, I don't know, it felt very weak in the film. It didn't seem like he would go that crazy without sort of identifying that he had a little bit of crazy in him before. He was, you know, portrayed as, you know, borrowed from England. You know, he's from Russia and all that sort of stuff, and he's very well trained and all that sort of jazz. But yeah, he didn't have the crazy initials, like the crazy sort of vibe initially, which would make people think, oh, maybe he's gonna get twisted and turn into this sort of thing. So I thought that was a bit odd.
That's interesting that you say that, because I felt that his character, well, at least his character story, was one of the stronger aspects of the film.
Oh, okay.
You know, him being an older soldier, and he's got, as he says, you know, he's got all this knowledge now, and it's just a shame that he's aged and he's got a body that doesn't work as it used to. And when he sees the Hulk, you know, so what I suppose what he would consider the perfection, right, of human physical achievement. You know, I can understand why he would want to be like that or want a part of that. Certainly jealous of the fact that it's Bruce Banner that got these enhancements, and it's not him. You know, Bruce Banner is just a scientist. What would he need all this power for? And the fact that, yeah, Emil Blonsky, he's just, being a soldier is what he's known for. That's all he's done all his life. And if he did get the chance to get these powers, I can certainly see why he would leap at it and want more of it, as we see as the film progresses and leading him to turn into the Abomination.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot of the time in the film, and, you know, General Ross sort of puts it quite well. Like, what if you had your knowledge? No, sorry, was it Emil? He said, you know, if I was 20 years younger with the knowledge I had, I wouldn't want to pick a fight with myself. Mm. You know what I mean? And I think General Ross, you know, replies saying, you know, what if I could arrange something close to that sort of thing? And I guess you're right. They do play on that quite a lot, but I don't know. It's part of me, obviously, I'm not put in that same situation, but I guess a part of me was like, would I sacrifice everything that I had just to see if I could even reach that potential? But maybe, you know, he didn't have extended family. Maybe he doesn't, you know, his circumstances could be different from everyone else's. And you're right, he is a soldier. And maybe he just thought, it's a twisted way of serving my country. If I could do my job better, more efficient, if I was stronger, maybe, you know, I could defend my country better or something like that. Who knows? He could be incredibly, incredibly patriotic. That's why he was willing to go down that path. He was willing to do all these things because he knew that he was for the greater good, for example. But I guess if I was in his shoes, I'm like, I'm giving up X, Y, and Z to become this. And obviously, when you're given a deal like this, you know, a deal with the devil, there's no going back. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I guess it got fractured even further when, you know, the leader slash the scientist that Mr. Blue meets up with Bruce, and that, I guess, maybe the gamma stuff sort of skewed him even more and fractured his personality even more. Who knows?
Do you think maybe that his turn into the Abomination was a bit too quick? Like, I understand he obviously had the experimental super soldier serum first, and I'm fine with all of that, but once he meets Samuel Stearns and gets Bruce Banner's blood into him, I don't know, it just seemed that, like, that sequence, it was missing something. Or maybe it's just me.
Well, if I'm remembering Emil's sort of backstory in the comics, he gets his Abomination related powers in a very similar sort of way that Hulk does. Obviously not saving Rick Jones or saving someone, but first from gamma radiation exposure. And yeah, you're right. Like, I guess a blood transfusion could be, or like a sample of his blood, you know, may have been not enough. Maybe if he was like blasted with something as well, you know, or something like that, maybe to trigger even further. Like, but I guess you could argue She-Hulk, her birth and origin came from a blood transfusion from her cousin, which was, you know, Bruce Banner. But I guess a blood transfusion, you know, you're always taking a lot more blood rather than, we don't know how much blood was put into Emil Blonsky. We don't know. Yeah, we don't know, like, what steps Samuel Stern / the leader went to get him to that point, you know. I don't remember seeing that in the film, because it was more of like a cutaway.
Yeah, that's it. That's why, like, for me, it felt as though there's meant to be, like, I don't know if there was a scene missing. I don't think there was, but it just feels as though it just was too quick. Like, it watching it as an audience, you know, I just felt there was something missing there. Just to sort of bridge the two scenes or the sequence a bit more. So because everything else has been so detailed.
That's true. Yeah.
I guess we should touch on some of the other characters in the film as well, such as Betty Ross and her father, General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross. What did you think of Liv Tyler's performance compared to Jennifer Connelly, who played the character in Ang Lee's Hulk?
See, I've always associated Liv Tyler with, like, Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, yeah. That is what she's known for.
Yeah. And she's got this almost borderline typecast of a very soft-spoken, very warm-hearted sort of type human being. And she portrays Betty Ross very well. I do feel like Betty in different media of the Hulk, she's got a bit more of an edge to her because she's I guess you can consider, like, maybe like a military brat to a certain degree, you know, being, you know, your dad is a general, obviously, you know, he's quite well known and becomes later the Red Hulk and all that sort of stuff. So obviously, you know, for her to be portrayed as she is, I think it's quite good. I haven't seen a bear. Yeah, I don't know if we've really had much chance to explore Betty's character as much. She just feels like a very supporting character to the Hulk, which in some respects is what she's definitely well known for, but not the only dimension that she has, which is a bit of a shame. But Liv Tyler, I think as a whole with the film, was good. She definitely played the very compassionate, caring, understanding Betty that we've always known to always help Bruce whenever needed and always sort of like going against her father to a certain degree. And I think she carried it quite well. She did have a little bit of that whole elven, I'm a really soft-hearted, very soft-spoken sort of type person. And she doesn't, minus a very select snippets of the film, she didn't have very much, I feel that she didn't have much of an opinion or a voice or like just that sort of this is my personality type thing. She was just very much, I'm going to hide in the background a lot of the time. I don't know why. I just get that vibe from her.
No, I think you're right there. That's how I saw the character. Like, she, you know, they go to the trouble of making her a fellow scientist of Bruce Banner's, which is great, you know, giving her a bit more depth as opposed to just simply being the general's daughter. But then they don't really give her anything to do. She's just, there's a plot device, you know, Bruce Banner longs for her, Bruce Banner gets the data from her, and it's such a shame that Liv, she didn't get anything of note. I feel as though she was a bit wasted in the role. I mean, don't get me wrong, she was good, she did the best with what she had, but just disappointing, especially the fact that we don't see her in the MCU again. She doesn't show up, she doesn't even get a mention, whereas Thunderbolt Ross does.
It's really funny you say that, because as I was making that comment about Betty and Liv, I'm just like, do we ever see her again? And you've obviously just confirmed that we don't. And I just feel that that's a bigger waste, because Betty, you know, General Ross and Bruce Banner, the trio of them, and obviously Rick Jones to a certain degree, were always, you know, the central package to the Hulk. You know, if you were to strip down Hulk from like the Samson, the leader and all that sort of stuff, and you want the core cast, it would be those four or those three, you know. But now, we have never seen Betty Ross since then, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, whilst it was good that they brought Ross back in some capacity later on, he never really interacts with Bruce Banner either. And so there's that history there, but it's unacknowledged. And I'm still waiting for them to meet up again and sort of hash it out. I feel as though there's a lot of unresolved stuff between the two characters.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows? Maybe they're just saving it up for, you know, the Thunderbolts. Maybe they're saving it up for, you know, when you know, Thunderbolt Ross becomes the Red Hulk or something, or Betty becomes the She-Red Hulk, or who knows? Who knows? I guess the MCU is at a turning point where the stories can kind of go in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different landscapes, because they're bringing such, I guess, like Kang the Conqueror from Loki and all sort of stuff. They're bringing a lot of interesting ideas and concepts that I never even dreamed could even be portrayed on a wide scale to a huge audience, and in such, you know, from TV shows to movies. I never thought that this would ever be possible. You know, I remember having a chat with a friend of mine when we just watched, you know, the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, and we were just like, you know what? It would be really cool if we could have Civil War or like the Avengers as a film. And then we were just thinking, you know, what would the piece needs to be, you know, to get this character to meet this character. And obviously they've done it, and it was, you know, it was fantastic. So I guess, you know, I have a lot of expectations and a lot of hype in my head for how they're going to integrate and how deep will they go down in certain rabbit holes, you know, for all the other different characters and their other side characters, just their entire universes, you know, because Doctor Strange has a huge cast of different characters. You know, the Hulk is even wider. You know, they could talk about when he becomes Joe Fixit, or when he was originally Joe Fixit, the gray color, you know, and the different colors of the Hulk. You know, you've got, like I was touching on before, A-Bomb with Rick Jones, you've got Samson with the green hair, and, you know, the same is from Greek mythology. Is that where it's from, Samson?
I do believe, isn't that a biblical myth or something like that? Samson, you know, the length of his hair affecting, well, in the comics, the length of his strength, correct, yes. Yeah,
you know, so who knows how deep this the rabbit hole will go. And I think I'm kind of excited to see what direction they'll take certain things, you know, because each of the different characters of the MCU have a huge, closets, sort of repertoire of characters and storylines that can be easily explored. But I do think the Hulk's one is, it goes through a lot of twists and turns. You know, you've got World War Hulk, which is absolutely planet-wide destruction. You know, you got the times where Hulk and Bruce Banner split in half and they become two separate beings. You know, you've got Amadeus Cho, which is a different version of the Hulk entirely. Then you've got the Maestro, you know, in the far-flung apocalyptic future, when Hulk is like one of the last sort of last surviving Avengers and all that sort of stuff. And he turns borderline evil. And I just hope that all these other unresolved plot lines that have come from this film and other films sort of get tied up. Like the leader in this film, you see the birth of it, but you don't see obviously what, you know, Dr. Stern becomes. You don't see, you know, what does it do to him, or what is he planning and all this sort of stuff. Cause you could see a bit of the crazy.
Yeah, it's such a shame that they've got all these projects coming on, and yet The Incredible Hulk is still very much a standalone thing. It's. I think that's part of the reason why it's so forgotten, right? I mean, yes, we get Bruce Banner and the Hulk appearing in you know, Thor Ragnarok and the Avengers films, and he'll be appearing in the upcoming She-Hulk series. But it's just a such a shame. I think it's mainly to do with the fact that Universal hold the distribution rights. That we're not getting an actual Hulk sequel of some sort. And it's a real shame because they've got so many dangling plot threads. As I said, the leader, that thing's unresolved. I do believe they do touch upon it in one of the MCU tie-in comics. You know, we know that S.H.I.E.L.D. takes him into custody, but that's as far as it goes. It's just so annoying. Especially
it's just like you brush under the rug sort of thing.
That's it. I mean, it's great that Thunderbolt Ross gets seen again, and I do believe it's great that we'll get Abomination again in Shang-Chi, as we see from the trailers. But it'd just be good to get another Hulk film just so we can see the Hulk go all out and smash things. Because that's what I loved about this film. That's what I loved about the last act. That fight between him and Abomination. It's just going all out, this huge brawl between these two giant characters, even though they're both CGI creations. That, to me, replicated the comics that I remember reading growing up and brought a lot of joy. So I guess, you know, in that sense, I'm a little biased to this film, right? It brought back a lot of childhood memories.
Yeah, and like, I guess there are parts of that fight that I felt were a bit, hey, how you going? I don't know what's going on sort of here at the moment, because you had moments where Hulk showed like clear intelligence, where it was picking up the car, splitting the car in half. You know, he's got boxing gloves now.
Oh yeah, I love that moment. I believe director Louis Leterrier, he said that the inspiration for that came from one of the Hulk video games, Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
I believe
that's something players can do.
I was going to say that was like one of my favorite games of the PS2. It was alongside. It was alongside when that Spider-Man game on the PlayStation 2 came out, where you had to. It was the age of where comic book related games was like, you know, you were the Hulk or Spider-Man, and some of the missions were like traversing across the city in an X amount of time, and Hulk could obviously super jump and do his sonic boom, and he could do his smash and all sort of stuff. And they were really, really fun. And yes, I can see, okay, now that makes a lot more sense, because yeah, you know, I can see Hulk using a car, but I would imagine him picking it up and throwing it at someone, or picking it up and like slapping it down on someone. He wouldn't take it apart, uses boxing gloves as like a cushioning sort of thing. And that's what I was going to say about the film, that like there are parts where he's incredibly intelligent and he knows, he doesn't really say Hulk smash or Hulk anything. He doesn't speak to himself in the third person. Whenever he conveys his emotions and talks to Betty, it's very much like, yeah, I don't know how to convey it in the most efficient way possible, but he obviously shows a lot of love, a lot of care, and can get his point across. And then the next minute, when they just run away from that fight in the middle of the university, and they're hiding, you know, by some rocks, and it's raining and it's pouring, and then the thunder strikes, and then he yells out and roars at the lightning and the thunder. And I'm just like, well, what is this? You know, you've got a huge spectrum between, you know, real intelligence and, you know, I'm not speaking the third person because I'm, you know, I know what I'm trying to say, and like using boxing gloves and fighting in a certain particular way. Then you've got this other side where it feels very much like he's like the, like Hulk, where I guess loud booms and thunders could sound like gunfire and all this sort of stuff. And that's where he's getting that confusion, you know, from. Yeah. So I feel like the film swayed a lot in terms of what they gave him credit for, what they didn't give him credit for.
Interesting. I noticed how, you know, the Hulk wasn't as intelligent as he should be, you know, as it is in the comics, but I guess I didn't see the shift as much as you. I don't know. Maybe it's because I just got all wrapped up in just seeing the Hulk as this giant thing and seeing him smash things and bash things around.
Oh, don't get me wrong. That was super entertaining, you know, and great to see. And when he used the his sonic boom to put out the fire before the helicopter when it crashed, and it was about to explode.
Yeah.
Again, incredible use of intelligence. And I'm just like, I'm confused with how you're trying to portray him, because obviously there are a lot of different iterations of the Hulk, and they all have varying levels of intelligence. There's a version where he's as smart as Bruce Banner, but maybe like half the strength of the Hulk, and he doesn't get stronger from anger. There's that version. Then you have the version where, you know, he has both worlds, i.e. the Maestro, but he's obviously a bit twisted and all sort of stuff. And then you have Joe Fixit, where he's basically permanently the Hulk. he's great, and he's a gangster, you know, and he's called Joe Fixit. He's a bouncer at, in front of a casino, and he's wearing a giant suit, is what I always remember him back to the comic book days. And I'm just like, you have such stark contrast, and you know, I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just being nitpicky, you know, for some reason all the characters of some sort of shade of green, I've always really enjoyed Green Lantern for some reason, and then the Hulk, I don't know if it's green's my color, I don't know what it is, but yeah, I feel like, you know, if you're going to stand by and do justice to the Hulk, stick to, you know, I guess one type of form, and just run with it. You know, there's nothing wrong with showing that he is a smarter brute, rather than I'm Hulk Smash, I speak in third person, I will just break things. And it's not a very interesting character, but if you show depth, if you show that he really considers his actions and how they affect other people, it makes an interesting Hulk, but perhaps one that's not terribly faithful to the text. But I guess it just, yeah.
Yeah, I guess with this early on, this is, again, this is the second film in the MCU, they're probably still trying to work out certain aspects of the character. You know, he has only three lines of dialogue in this entire film. So it's leave me alone, which isn't even said in the third person, as you've pointed out. Hulk Smash and Betty, right? And I don't know. It's interesting to see how they've changed the character, how the character has progressed once Mark Ruffalo took over the character. They've definitely kept him speaking the third person, I mean, as we saw in Ragnarok, and then, you know, he's just completely different now, given the two personalities have merged, so, yeah. Now, one of the things I do like about this film, though, is the fact that they went to a lot of places and filmed there, you know, they didn't just put in a CGI background for many scenes. So, as I'm sure you're well aware, they did go to Brazil to film that, the first third of the film or so. And then they went to Toronto to fill in as New York City. And I'm not sure if I've ever told you this story, but I actually pick my holiday destinations based on where Marvel films have been filmed. So September, October of 2019. So obviously way before the pandemic became the big problem that it has become.
Pre-COVID.
I finally, you know, decided to go to Canada. I went to Vancouver first because that's where a lot of the X-Men films have filmed. But then I made sure to obviously go to Toronto, which is where they filmed The Incredible Hulk. And they filmed that last fight with the Abomination on a stretch of road called Yonge Street. And it's actually one of the busiest areas of the city. So the fact that they got to close it down is really surprising to me. It's not too far away from a place called Yonge Dundas Square, which is almost the equivalent to New York's Times Square. So that gives you an idea of how many people they get going through the area.
And they shut down. It's a lot of hustle bustling.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that they shut down, it's like several blocks for three or four nights, I believe. It's just absolutely incredible. But if you go there now, parts of that street, some of the buildings have been demolished and it doesn't look quite the same, but still cool nonetheless if for those that do want to have a visit there. Obviously not now, given the lack of...
Incredibly fun times
now. Unbelievable. But yeah, no, that is something I would recommend. You can also pop over to... I think it's Toronto University, which obviously stands in for Culver University in the film. So, yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very, very cool.
I also, because I plotted all the the points I wanted to go to onto Google Maps, just so I, you know, I knew how far everything would be. And for some reason, I really wanted to visit the bridge that Betty and Bruce meet on in the film. I don't know if you remember, this is after they go to Stanley's and it's raining and Betty drives to find Bruce.
Oh, right. Hulk is like, Betty catches a glimpse of him. He's walking out the back kitchen door, and then she goes back and saying, hey, was that who I thought it was? And he's pouring down, obviously, you know, walking through the rain and all this sort of stuff. So did you find that place?
I did, believe it or not. So this is the actual name, apparently. It's called Cherry Street Strauss-Trunion Bascule Bridge. What a name.
I'm sorry, what?
It's ridiculously long. It's not like the Sydney Harbour Bridge or anything like that, but it's just like outside of the actual CBD of Toronto. And I'm just like, my goodness, this better be worth it. And I was running out of, this is close to sunset. And I'm just like, I could wait for a bus, which I didn't know when, you know, when it would be coming, or I could walk. And I don't know, stupidly, maybe in hindsight, I decided to walk over there. It was like a 40-minute walk.
You just
went there.
You're just emulating Bruce Banner and what he was going through that day. You know,
I was
just
very
really
lonely.
Want to get into character.
I wanted a Betty to chase after me. but yeah, I get there. I'm rushing to take pictures, you know, trying to beat the light. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, great, I'm done now. And I realize that I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, oh, I really should not be walking back. Try and find the nearest bus stop. And there's usually, you know, with bus stops, you'll have like a timetable so you know when the bus comes. And this one didn't. I'm like, great. I'm going to be mugged or murdered in the middle of Toronto and no one knows where I am. But clear, look, I survived to tell the tale and I used that picture in my book, actually. So well worth it, I think.
Well, that's awesome. That's really, really cool. I think I'd loved... I'm sure you could just find out this information, but I'd love to know where some of the scenes were filmed in some of the other MCU, as even in this one. I wonder if they ever do like guided tours, you know, like this was the scene where, you know, Dr. Stern became the leader and all this sort of stuff. I think it'd be interesting, you know, if you could, you know, if there was like a company that plotted out the entire MCU and where did everyone go and where was everything filmed, and you did like almost like a around the world in MCU days or something like that, you know. That'd be cool once COVID is not such a thing.
Funnily you should say that. My books actually do plot where most of the, well, almost all of the scenes of the MCU are filmed. But I do believe in terms of actual tours, though, I know that there's a few companies in Atlanta that do tours. They take you around to all the Marvel films, and I do believe they show you some of the places The Walking Dead filmed at as well.
Okay.
But I think it's always just fun to go yourself, you know? That way you can go at your own pace. You're not being so rushed through places, and you'll find interesting places like I do, like that bridge in Toronto. I don't think many tour companies would take everyone, you know, all the way out of the city just to that one filming location.
Look, man, this is a very important bridge. It was a huge emotional piece in the film. You just don't understand.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time for today's episode. Thank you very much again, Cheston, for joining me.
All my absolute pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Please like or follow the Marvelous Synergy Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr pages, and subscribe to this podcast to hear future episodes. If you want to learn more about the MCU, you can find my guides to the films on Amazon. And with that, I'll be signing off. See you next time.